This is a CBC podcast. She is one of the finest interviewers in broadcasting. She gets authors to share the rawness of their artistic process and their lives.
What I really are afraid of is people being angry at me or do think that I'm an idiot or something. So I'm very concerned about other people's opinion, which means that I always restricted myself.
Culture, literature, life. Eleanor Wachtel touches it all at cbc.ca/writersandcompany.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Fisheries Broadcast for Wednesday, June 26th. It's Brian McHugh in Cornerbrook filling in for John Furlong. Tonight, a net loss from the 1992 cod moratorium meant a net gain for seabirds. Fewer of them were getting killed as a result of getting caught in fishing gear. We'll hear about some of the implications of that for today's fishery. And we'll hear a response from MP Ryan Cleary on the possible decommissioning of the Coast Guard vessel Sir Wilfrid Grenfell. We all know what an economic and social tragedy the 1992 cod moratorium was for this province. We haven't known as much about what it meant to other kinds of ocean-going life, seabirds, for example. But a PhD student at Memorial University is helping change that. Researcher Paul Regular says the numbers of diving seabirds seem to be climbing. It all has to do with the fact that there are far fewer nets in the water to snag them and kill them. Downside, certain types of gulls have been in decline because fish harvesters used to leave plenty of scraps for the gulls to feast on. The research also offers some useful lessons for the future relationship between the fishery and seabirds. CBC reporter Curtis Rumbold spoke with Paul Regular.
What sparked your interest in checking out seabird mortality and the relationship with nets?
Well, it was largely sparked through my supervisor, Dr. Bill Monavecchi, and Gregory Robertson, Dr. Gregory Robertson. And they've been looking at this research for a long time, and it's been well known that seabirds get entangled in fishing nets, and they drown and die. And so it's one of the main mortality factors, so that really sparked my interest in how that affects their populations.
Right, and so but this was the kind of the first study that looked directly at the relationship?
Well, there's been many studies that looked at the relationship between populations and fishing effort, but very few has had the data that we've had access to get at the actual relationship or to see, get a glimpse of what it's actually doing at the population level. And so it's been well documented that many die, there's lots of mortality, and where there's smoke, there's fire.
And so how big of a connection is there?
Well, there's pretty good data that we have that shows a negative relationship between population changes and how many nets are in the water. So there's a fairly good relationship there at Gull Island and Great Island specifically here in Witless Bay. And so we have that there. And more widespread, we have more of a correlation between overall population trends before and after the moratorium and fishing activity, you know,
right.
So and the population changes, yeah.
So where did you get the, the raw data to come up with your conclusions?
Well, Environment Canada, the Canadian Wildlife Service, has been monitoring these populations for decades. And so they've had lots of seabird census data collected over the years, through the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And we also gathered data or received data from the DFO, Department of Fisheries and Oceans, on the fishing activity and fishing, how many fishing nets were in the water, and just to get a sense of fishing effort.
So was there a big uptick in numbers after the moratorium? There was a lot less gear on the water then?
Absolutely, and it's quite interesting. It's the moratorium created big changes, as we all know, and tens of thousands of nets were removed from the waters across the whole Newfoundland and Labrador shelf, and so all the inshore birds, the diving seabirds such as your common murres, your Atlantic puffins, your northern gannets, all the ones tourists love to look at, they weren't getting bycatted in the nets anymore, and so it was really good for them. Their populations have been increasing ever since the removal of all those nets. But on the flip side, there are birds like herring gulls and great blackback gulls who used to rely really heavily on all those discards from the fishery close to shore, like all the cod heads and the cod guts, and that were all thrown over, and they would scavenge on that. And so without all that all those discards and offal, they've been having a harder time raising their chicks these days, and so their populations have been going down.
So is the population considered to be healthy now, or healthier?
Well, it's certainly a good news story for the diving seabirds. Their populations are recovering, because we think that the activities pre-moratorium were really affecting their populations and causing them to go down. But now they're recovering, their populations are going up to a healthy level. And the diving seabirds, on the other hand, are going down. But in actuality, their populations were artificially inflated by all that free food that was available during the fishery. Okay. And so now they're probably returning to more natural levels.
Okay. What is the next step with this? Now you got the study out there. Is there something we can do to kind of help protect the bird populations and maintain them at a healthy level?
Well, as I mentioned, it's certainly good for the diving seabirds. They've been going up. But still, we also see that even in recent days, there are interactions with fishing, limited fishing that occurs inshore, and the populations of some of our diving seabirds are, or at least common murres specifically, we see that they're stunted by this activity. So what goes on in many places is capelin are in a certain area. Murres eat capelin and go to that area, and cod also eat capelin, so fishers go to that area. And so it's this here culmination of a hotspot and interactions that generates lots of birds bycott. So something like 3 gillnets can catch hundreds of birds.
Right.
in a very acute and small area.
Right. I guess there's ways to protect them though through new technology and new gear types. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely, yeah. So there are gear types like cod pots that could be used more regularly, that the diving seabirds are at a lower risk to getting caught up and drowned in those types of gears, but it still catches cod, and good quality cod as well. Mm. So it could benefit the birds and the fishers. Yeah. And there's also things that could be implemented known as marine protected areas, and these are known hotspots, these known locations that the birds love. So they could be protected from fishing activities, and that would really help their population recoveries.
But I guess that takes some political will to make the change to say, guys, no more gillnets, we're going to go with cod pots.
Absolutely. And so it's quite a bit to expect, and that's that'll be quite the political maneuver to get such a massive change to happen with gear types, because it would incur a huge expense, and it would be quite the move. So maybe I don't know. I'd be guessing at how best to go about that. Perhaps a gradual process.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's one way this research can be used to better manage bird stocks and fish stocks, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of options as well aside from changing gear types. You could change the time you put your nets in the water. Just fish at night, or that could be a lot to ask as well, but there are plenty of options and stuff like that can be done to help minimize its impact. Yeah.
So tell me about the response to this report. You're kind of surprised that it got a little bit of a life of its own, eh?
Well, absolutely, and it was kind of really lucky timing is what I feel like. Just a week before our paper was published in Biology Letters, there was a global review published in Biological Conservation, which shows that almost 400,000 or more than 400,000 perhaps birds are bycott annually globally. So this was a large global review that was done, and so that really increased the awareness of the impacts of gillnets on diving seabirds. And so just a week after, we put out our study, and so together they've really increased awareness, it appears.
Yeah. And you got picked up in some prestigious, more popular science kind of publication as well.
Yeah, we were lucky to be to get a response from Nature. They were interested in writing up a report on the study, and also Scientific America picked up the same story. So, okay. Yeah.
You say the global study actually attached a number to it. Could your study, did that spit out a number at the end of the day? Do we have any idea how much gear are affecting birds in this province?
Well, we don't have a specific number from our study as to how much it reduced the populations or what have you. But we, from previous studies, we do know that before the moratorium, perhaps tens of thousands of birds were bycatted annually, and after the moratorium, it's been substantially reduced. So from current studies, we know those changes, and so yeah, it's just sort of connecting the dots between that and the populations.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Paul Regular is a PhD student at Memorial University. Joe O'Brien was a fisherman before 1985. Then he started operating whale watch tours. He says most species of birds seem to be flourishing since those days. And he also spoke with Curtis.
You've been watching the birds closely since the moratorium. Have you seen any differences?
Yes, since the 1992 when they shut down the cod fishery, there's been no fixed gear fishing with gillnets and salmonets and that type of thing in and around this nature reserve. So the bird populations are at an all-time high. But today we're seeing a little change because we're seeing eagle invasions like the birds we saw at Green Island today. The populations of eagles in this area have exploded. It's like having 2.5 million chicken sandwiches available for the eagle family, which is really, really good for the eagles, not so good for the murres and the puffins. But for what I've seen in the last year since the moratorium, the bird populations are at an all-time high. Mm-hmm. There's no mortality to fishing gear, so except for predators and scavengers in the ocean and in the environment, the bird populations are as much as the land can stand.
So you think more gear in the water is going to be hard on the bird population?
Yes, but the changing of fishery, the way they're setting up the fishery, the fixed gear fishing and the strict quotas for the vessels, we won't see as many fishermen. A lot of the fishermen in this area have retired since the moratorium because it's been a long, long time now.
Yeah. So you think there could be a balance between, you know, your business today and what you used to do as a fisherman?
Everybody's looking for a balance. We need a balance for to serve the guests, to get an experience. The birds need a balance in order to reproduce, and the guests need a balance in order to get value for their visual. So it's all about balances and coexisting and cohabitating, and the birds seem to be doing very, very strong over this last number of years because they're hunter birds and they can pursue the fish into the water column. They seem to do very well, and their timing of the egg hatching is very, very well too as well.
Have you noticed any decrease in some types of birds?
Certain species don't do so well, like the pelagics. The kittiwakes feeding on near the surface seem to have a difficult time timing their egg hatching for the best availability of food. But the murre and the puffin are very, very strong, and their populations are doing really, really well.
That's Joe O'Brien, and he runs a whale-watching tour. Here with the Fisheries Broadcast for this Wednesday, 17 minutes before 6 on the island, 13 past 5 in most of Labrador. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll hear a little bit more about Merv Wiseman and his concerns about the future of the Coast Guard vessel Sir Wilfrid Grenfell. Merv Wiseman has finally gotten some response to his calls of alarm about the Coast Guard vessel Sir Wilfrid Grenfell. We got a call back today from NDP Member of Parliament Ryan Cleary. Wiseman, who's now retired from the Coast Guard, told us last week that he had learned the Grenfell is going on cold layup this fall for 7 months. He predicts DFO may never bring it back so the department can save money. Cold layup basically means a vessel is taken out of service altogether and is not even available to respond to emergencies. DFO would only say that the Grenfell will be assessed as part of an operational review of all Coast Guard vessels, and there would not be gaps in search and rescue capability while the Grenfell was off. Wiseman told us the Grenfell is one of the best and most versatile vessels the Coast Guard has. He publicly challenged the FFAW, the Coast Guard Workers Union, and Newfoundland politicians to fight for the Grenfell. Ryan Cleary is the NDP Member of Parliament for St. John South, Mount Pearl, and he reached us today. We've heard some of the concerns that retired Coast Guard employee Merv Wiseman brought up about the possible elimination of the Sir Wilfrid Grenfell. What are you hearing about the possible future of that vessel?
The cut to the chase. The future of that vessel is up in the air. Now, I had a conversation earlier this afternoon, with John Butler, the Assistant Commissioner, Canadian Coast Guard, Atlantic Region. What he basically said is that right now the Wilfrid Grenfell is currently on indefinite layup, and a decision will be made later this year or early next year on whether or not that vessel will ever return to service. She may or she may not return to service. Government has set aside apparently $300 million to use for vessel life extensions, and the Grenfell may have a life extension under that program, or it may not. Again, a decision has yet to be made. The bottom line here, again, cutting to the chase again, what this means from my perspective is one less vessel for dedicated SAR, search and rescue response, off the northeast coast of Newfoundland and Labrador. That's my main concern. Now, when I spoke to John Butler, we had a conversation about this, and we went back and forth, and he was very accommodating in terms of addressing all of my questions. But his explanation is this. He says that since two of the Coast Guard regions have been combined, that's the Maritime region and the Newfoundland and Labrador region, I believe that happened last year, since the two regions have been combined into the Atlantic region, he now has access to more ships. So he has access to 41 ships where before they had access, for example, in the Newfoundland and Labrador region, to 16 or 17 ships. So his access to ships has increased, and that gives him, according to Mr. Butler, that gives him more flexibility in terms of assigning ships here or there. Now, the Grenfell had been used for NAFO patrol offshore. So right off the bat, when she's taken out of service, with her out of service, we're going to have fewer ships there for, or one less ship definitely there for NAFO patrol. So that's a concern there. We want to make sure we have ships out there that are constantly keeping the foreign trawlers on their toes. Now, John Butler also talks about how there are two new midshore patrol vessels that have been dedicated to for the East Coast. Now, he says, you know, that's a positive in terms of taking the Grenfell out of service. But from my perspective, these two new midshore patrol vessels are for the entire Atlantic region, not just Newfoundland and Labrador. They're for the entire Atlantic region. Now, and they're also dedicated to conservation and protection. Now, every ship under the Coast Guard's flag, every Coast Guard ship is dedicated. Its first priority is to search and rescue response. But these two ships are for the entire Atlantic coast, not just for Newfoundland and Labrador. And, of course, the Grenfell spent 99% of her life off the Newfoundland and Labrador region. So what this means is we'll have one less ship for the one less dedicated ship for the Newfoundland and Labrador region. And again, Butler talks about how he'll have more flexibility by combining two regions and having more access to more ships. But from my perspective, we're going to have one fewer dedicated search and rescue vessel. And considering some of the search and rescue decisions that have already been made in Newfoundland and Labrador in terms of, for example, closing the Maritime Rescue Subcenter in St. John's in my riding of St. John's South Mount Pearl, or their failure to act on improving search and rescue response times, especially for the Cormorant helicopters based out of Gander, I do have the question, this decision and, of course, decisions made by the Coast Guard in the past.
How about yourself? What will you be doing further on the issue?
Well, again, I had a conversation with John Butler. I had a lot of questions and a lot of concerns. He addressed them. He says a decision has yet to be made, so I'm going to be keeping in extremely close contact with John Butler and the Coast Guard to find out exactly what's going to happen. I have a lot of concerns, in the past, and a lot of concerns with this moving forward. So I'll keep in close contact to make sure we have the best search and rescue services we can off our coast.
Ryan Cleary, thanks very much for this today.
Welcome, sir.
Ryan Cleary is the NDP Member of Parliament for St. John's South Mount Pearl. And in light of Merv Wiseman's comments about his concern over the future of the Sir Wilfrid Grenfell, I wanted to call him today after I heard about the announcement this morning by Defence Minister Peter MacKay. He was speaking on behalf of the Honourable Keith Ashfield, the Minister of Fisheries and Oceans. MacKay announced federal funding of up to $488 million to get 18 to 21 new vessels for the Coast Guard fleet. Minister MacKay made the announcement during the 2013 Mary Tech Conference in Halifax. He announced that the Coast Guard will be procuring search and rescue lifeboats, specialty vessels, near-shore fishery research vessels, channel survey and sounding vessels, and midshore science vessels, along with special NAVAIDS vessels. And after we absorbed all that news, I called retired Coast Guard employee Merv Wiseman today. On first blush, what are your thoughts on what Peter MacKay had to say this morning?
Well, you know, it's a nice chunk of money, and it's hard to not to be, it's hard not to be positive about that kind of spending. But, you know, it doesn't come close to dealing with the issue that I raised last week and at other times about losing vessels, specifically, you know, the Sir Wilfrid Grenfell. And I know last year, of course, we talked a lot about the loss of the Coast Guard cutter Harp, and there's been others. What I'm seeing here today, of course, is not necessarily announcement of new money. You know, it's all part of, as I understand it, the what the this government is calling the National Shipbuilding Procurement Strategy. And we've heard about the announcements for, you know, the military, the Navy, and some other civilian large vessels as well. This really, Brian, deals with, you know, revitalization of the fleet, a fleet that is, in a lot of respects, needs modernizations. Most of the vessels have reached its life cycle. For example, as I understand it, part of this spending will be the replacement of the Aran-class lifeboats in Burgio and Buren. There will be new vessels, lifeboats. These old lifeboats have reached their life cycle. They're in excess of 20 years old at the moment. And, you know, I recall when they were built in the Prince Edward Island back about 20 years ago, there was an announcement came out about the same time from the British Royal Lifeboat Society that they were actually replacing these kinds of vessels that we were putting in Buren and Burgio and other places in Canada because they need a new class of vessels. These vessels were now outdated. So there you go. We were just building them as new vessels. So there will be replacements for these and others throughout Atlantic Canada and across Canada. So there's no replacement for a vessel like the Sir Wilfrid Grenfell, for example. You know, these new vessels, the lifeboats, for example, again, will be nearshore vessels. These vessels will, yes, be a little bit larger, more horsepower, and will have a little more endurance, but, you know, their limits is inshore. Basically, they will be pretty much limited to 100, 120 miles offshore. We know we have a, you know, an economic zone that goes out to 200 miles and obligations for search and rescue that goes well beyond, where vessels like the Sir Wilfrid Grenfell can only do that kind of work. And but you know, don't let you hear me say that you know, the Burgio lifeboats and the Buren lifeboats is not needed. It is definitely, no question about that. But nevertheless, there's a larger picture to all this that's not being made clear through this announcement.
What would be on your priority list, if you had a chance to put one into the government, what would you like to see here by way of priority?
Well, you know, I think this is a priority in terms of replacing these lifeboats. Obviously, it is, and you know, this has been an ongoing process by all governments. This is nothing new for this government. All governments have replaced you know, various components of the fleet as they reach their life cycle. That is part of what we're required to do as a government responsible for the Canadian Coast Guard, the Navy, and so on and so forth. So this is part of their, you know, national obligation, you know, to the fleet to do that. I believe we need to pay more attention to what the needs are that's out there. And when we identify needs, for example, diverse needs in the offshore to address the issues around, you know, oil exploration, transshipment areas, for example, from Hibernia and other sites of oil production into Come By Chance, and of course the Long Harbor area, transatlantic shipping. Otherwise, you know, we have to look at the needs of that and understand that you know, small lifeboats, inshore lifeboats, while they're you know, quite relevant to a degree, they're simply not designed to deal with the kinds of issues, distress, catastrophic issues that can occur as a result of accidents offshore. So, you know, obviously this is a priority. The Sir Wilfrid Grenfell is a priority, no question about it. And again, we need to go back to the Auditor General's report of just a couple of months ago that talked about the idea that we need to carry out a program that is based on needs, and not based on a fleet that, you know, the government would put in place themselves. So we don't put a fleet in place, in other words, and say, okay, this is going to suit the search and rescue program. We look at the search and rescue program and its needs and say, these are the vessels that we will put in place. And that's not what's happening right now.
Merv Wiseman, thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for your time, Ryan.
Merv Wiseman is a retired Coast Guard employee. If you'd like to comment on this story or anything else you hear in the broadcast, call our Fish Line 576-5287 or 1-800-561-3474. That's 561-FISH. Or send us an email, fish@cbc.ca. Couple of notices quickly before we round it up for the night. Department of Fisheries and Oceans advises that the Capelin fixed gear fishery using traps and bar seine, including the modified bar seine known as the tuck seine, for vessels under 65 in portions of western Newfoundland will open at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. As well, the Atlantic halibut hook and line fishery, the long line fishery, in NAFFO Division 4RST for fixed gear vessels less than 65 based in western Newfoundland and southern Labrador will open at 6 a.m. this coming Friday, the 28th. It's for a 12-hour period and will close at 6 p.m. and it's open to the group of fish harvesters vessel class A291 who opted for the 12-hour 2,500-pound harvest cap fishery. That'll do it for this evening. Back again for tomorrow's broadcast at 5:30, 5 o'clock in most of Labrador. Have a great evening.
Looking for more CBC podcasts? Go to cbc.ca/podcasting.